You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. I never meant cares about you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all of the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it was not, and it had to get done, it must get done, it will get done, because you'll get it done. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we have much love and respect for you. Because you don't procrastinate. You don't put it off. No, you get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Also, too, you can use the shortcut, whatever search engine you use, you know, whatever that might be. Put in the search, babaoshi.net. Baba, B-A-B-A, Oshi, O-S-H-I, net, N-E-T, babaoshi.net. And once again, there will be programs that are dated and titled. Yes. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. That's right, every Thursday, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba. On Friday at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. I was listening last night. It got really lively, I tell you. Yeah, and Brother Jay was on the program. It was good to hear Brother Jay. I hope he gives us a call again, you know. Brother Jay. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. It's a great thing to spend money with each other and to support one another and help build with one another. Yes. Yes. We promote that seriously here. Get everything you need. Africa for the Africans. My good brother, Bomani Tayemba, he's ready to take another group of our people to the motherland on a trip of a lifetime coming up in a couple of weeks. Yeah. March. Yeah. March 29th. To April 9th, going to Liberia and Morocco. July 11th to July 23rd, Ghana. November 21st to December 2nd, Kemet. December 24th to January 4th, 2025, Azania. April 1st to April 11th, Senegal and Gambia. May 24th to June 5th, 2025, Ghana. November 21st to December 1st, 2025, Brazil. Those are the chips that so far that Brother Bomani has posted on Africa for the Africans.org. Africa for the Africans.org. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Habashah. Habashahincorporated.org. And brothers and sisters, we appreciate the brothers and sisters of Habashah for the work that they're doing with the Habashah Works Program, Black Tar Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and Urban Green Jobs. Just fantastic work. The work that they did in Ghana to establish the Kashi Project, which is ongoing. And the dedication was 2 years ago at the Kashi Project. Yeah, 2022. So Habashahincorporated.org. Let me read about Habash. Is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Habashahincorporated.org. The LEDGE program, LEDGE, stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics, Brother Peter Brown. They deal in the area of human necessity, of human essentials, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in 6 different African countries with over 170 employees and over 260 members. Become a member of the LEDGE group. In fact, membership has its privileges. If you become a member of the LEDGE group, you can buy land. You can buy land in Tanzania. I might be overlooking the Serengeti. You might have a view of Kilimanjaro. You know, I don't know. But give it a try. My good brother, the minister of wellness, Brother Nathaniel Jordan, he's going to be in Kenya for some time. But I can't wait till he gets back so we can talk to him about the experience and all the things he's doing. And, of course, you can go to his website, theministerofwellness.com. I repeat, theministerofwellness.com. You can sign up for his ebook, which is free. You can check out the products that he has, the new lines of products, okay? TheMinisterOfWellness.com. Another program that we promote is Brother Jabril, Smy Pharmacy. And he put on his website all kind of good new products and oils and all kind of stuff, man. I love it. I love it. So you can check him out at Smy Pharmacy, SmiFarmacy.com, smypharmacy.com. Or give Brother Jabril a call at 770-765-7751. That's 770-765-7751. Smy Pharmacy. Or drop him an email at smypharmacy@gmail. smypharmacy@gmail. SmiFarmacy@gmail. The Moses West Foundation. Brothers and sisters, I can't say enough about how important it is of the great work that the Moses West Foundation is doing. In fact, it really would pain me that if this technology was not available, had he not, you know, engineered it and be able to produce it, it would be very painful, because that means that the world would be in such a terrible shape. But the fact, and once again, family, I'm not saying this is the solution.
it is part of a solution. Because what the atmospheric water generator does is give you clean, drinkable, usable water right away. Set the machine up, the atmosphere, because there's H2O molecules all around us, and the machine brings it in, sucks it in, separates all the toxins and so forth, kicks that to the curb, purifies, and you know, the H2O molecule, once it's ready, you open the tap up, and out comes clean drinking water, and that's real. The Moses West Foundation, please support them. The Moses West Foundation. Your funding is used for the atmospheric water generators, development and installation, research and development, operational research and development, operational cost, education and awareness.
Emergency this call response. May be recorded or transcribed.
So this brother is doing great work with the atmospheric water generator, emergency response and sustainability projects, the Moses West Foundation. Oh, yeah. Well, Dada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph Dibbert Abernathy. And they have a fine selection of smoothies, fruit drinks, pastries, dry goods like beans and so forth, all kind of good stuff like that. And on Saturday and Sunday, they provide vegan dishes, about $15, $20, I guess. I don't know what they are, $10, $15, $20, I don't know. But Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, outstanding, right on Ralph Dibbert Abernathy. Across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. All right. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, love her. She's a beautiful sister. And she has a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, and all kind of stuff like that. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The other bookstore we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar in Lithonia, which is east of Atlanta, off of I-20. You go take I-20 going east, exit 74. Make a left onto Main Street for Lithonia, and you're headed north over about a mile, a little over a mile. On the left will be Black Dot Cultural Center, Bookstore, and Coffee Bar. And then jump back in your ride and hit back the other way. Now you're going south. And jump back on I-20 east. Make a left. And the next exit, take the next exit, which is exit 75, Turner Hill Road. Go make a right, three lights. Make another right, and on the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market. The new Black Wall Street Market. Us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Every Thursday night, the Thursday night broadcast from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. You can listen on the computer. But if you want to give us a call at 929-477-2789, that you can listen to the program. And you can give questions, answer questions, comments, and concerns. Us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Brother Beach is not open today. He's only open from Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's the Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Tomorrow, give him a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. That brother has it all, I'm telling you. He even has a vegan restaurant on the premises, man. I tell you, Brother BJ. Sun God Essential, one-stop natural shop located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Please give my good sister Shelly Amundset a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun God Essential, your one-stop natural shop. And Sanjay-Haiti, brothers and sisters, I gave our sister Bayina Bello call and talk to her, but she's having some family issues with the death of her sister that she has to take care of. So I told her I would, you know, give her a call in a few weeks, let her, you know, straighten those things out and see if we can get her on the program to talk about what's happening in Haiti. Also to Mama Nabantu with the Pan-African Federalist Movement. I want to have conversation with her so we can get, because, I mean, you know, she has the insides, believe me. Mama Baina Bello. Sanjay-Haiti. Sister Gabrielle really is doing great work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And please go to the website at Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org. That's right. It's not pronounced Haiti. It's pronounced Haiti. Yeah, man, got that French sound. I don't know. Sonjay-Haiti.org. Baba Barudi, Mama Ya. Love the work that they're doing. If you want to support them, and please do, PayPal, if you use PayPal, you can just do Ya Baruti, YAABARUTI, at yahoo.com. If you want to use Cash App, the dollar sign, Ya, YAA, the letter M, Baruti, BARUTI, to make your contributions. Also, too, if you enjoy the literature that Baba Baruti puts out, which is, he's a prolific writer, go to AkabinHouse.com for this fine selection of books. And putting out more. He has his Higher Ground, his workshops coming up, all kind of good stuff from Baba Baruti, man. And considering his health issue, well, it's nothing internal, it's his back. But he's tireless, man. He's great. He is. He's really great. And, of course, as we do every program, we read from his book, The Inya Sesem, The Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 17th. Pain is not the problem. Pain is the message. Nana Kweku Opar. We fail to develop real genius. We need to win because the struggle component is missing. The struggle component, the struggle. As a result, in order to still give the appearance of strength, we redefine what genius is based on a weaker idea. How quickly we have forgotten that struggle strengthens, doubt drains. Be the warrior you claim to be, and be not judgmental of our own. When measuring the progress of others, never forget where you once were. Every warrior has a starting point that lies deep in the heart of chaos. Every journey that our center started in an awakening from menticide. Only the arrogant measure others without a credible point of reference. And arrogance is the bastard child of disorder, not a characteristic of centered warriors. Let the struggle of our ancestors confronted and conquered under conditions more horrific than any before or since be the measuring rod for the quality and relevance of the complaints we lodge against our frontline difficulties today. Affirm, listen to my pain. Affirm, listen to my pain. March 18th. Slave equal blackness. Convicts also equaled slaves. Therefore, the connection between slavery and blackness became easily translated to an idea of black criminality. The free American African population became more than just troublesome. They became dangerous, and dangerous people need to be imprisoned, which became Caucasians' ultimate solution of what to do with free American Africans. Sharshi McIntyre. Now that the drug laws are changing, but the need to reincarcerate African men, women, and children has not. And the school-to-prison pipeline is not, at this time, producing enough victims. We will really begin to see the return of debtors' prison. That's right, debtors' prison. How quickly you forget that a significant number of the indentured servants who were shipped here came from the multiple debtor prisons in England and elsewhere in Europe. Debt has become a very sophisticated legal instrument of control. The bankruptcy laws keeping the average person from behind bars are under systematic and relentless attack. Debtor prisons are returning. Not unsuspectingly, Mississippi currently has more people locked up for this reason, debt. It is merely a matter of time before every other Yoruba state, territory, and country follows suit. Everywhere and has, with everything else, devised to constrain, oppress, and destroy threats, we can expect to become the inmate of choice. Adhering to the wisdom can help. Nana Malcolm's father, Reverend Earl Little, warned us that credit is the first step into debt and back into enslavery. Soon, we are going to find that the unrealness of credit is worse than the accusations of the worthlessness of cash. Regardless, there is a method to this madness for them, and for them, it's against us. Affirm, I know the mind of Europeans see me. Affirm, I know how the mind of the Europeans see me. That's right. I know. The Inyasasim of daily revolutionary thought. Yes, brothers and sisters, today is Dr. Frances Cress Welsing's birthday, March 18th. That's right. So we're going to celebrate Frances. We're going to talk about her and, you know, the great work that she's done. And, yep. Oh, here it is. Frances was born Frances Luella Cress in Chicago on March 18, 1935. Her father, Henry Noah Cress, was a physician. Her mother, Ida Mae Griffin, was a teacher. She was the middle child of three girls, her elder sister, Lomi, and her younger sister, Barbara. In 1957, she earned a bachelor's degree at Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And in 1961, she met Johann Kramer Welsing, a Ghanaian, while enrolled at Howard University Medical School. They eventually married, but they had no children. In 1962, Frances received a MD from Howard University. And in the 1960s, she moved to D.C. and worked at many hospitals, especially children's hospitals. While Frances Cress Welsing was an assistant professor at Howard, she formulated her first body of work in 1969, the Cress Theory of Color Confrontation. She self-published in 1970. The paper subsequently appeared in the May 1974 issue of The Black Scholar. This was an introduction to her thoughts that would be developed into the ISIS papers, released 22 years later. This was a compilation of Welsing's essays about global and local race relationships. The Cress Theory on Color Confrontation, The Keys to the Colors. Yeah, man, Frances, beautiful sister. You know, in my relationship with Dr. Marimba Ani, I had a good chance to talk with Frances. And, you know, in fact, at a presentation they had here in Atlanta, you know, we had broke bread and so forth. And was just really beautiful to be with those two women. Two strong, beautiful women. Yeah. I was honored. I was honored. And of course, when she made her transition, I went to D.C. to be a part of the homegoing celebration of Frances Cresswell Welsing in Washington, D.C. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was January 2nd, 2016. She was 80 years old. Yeah. Beautiful sister. Beautiful, beautiful sister. Yeah. You know, when I got the ISIS papers, as soon as it came out, and began to read it and begin to understand it and all the psychological, all the symbolism, all of it is fantastic, you know. That her book and Marimba's book, Yurugu, were two eye-opening books for me. In fact, I consider Yurugu the Bible. I really do. And I know for some people it's kind of tough. It's a thick book. It's kind of tough to read. She puts a lot of verbiage in there that is different. You know, the Utamarao, the Utamaroho, the cultural ceiling, and so forth. You know, but that's the whole idea. It is from our framework. It ain't from white folks. Okay. And so, because of Frances' work and others in the African Center movement, the understanding that race is not a real concept. Europeans, Caucasians devised the concept of race. They came up with that. And you can, you know, look that up if you truly want to. You can look up Carol Linnaeus and Johann Blumenbach, Guggenheim University, those two specifically who came up with this idea of race. And the stratification with Caucasians, Europeans, whites, Yurugu being at the top and everybody else at the lower positions, with, of course, us at the lowest position. Yeah, yeah. And so I have a piece that I used to that I do, and I periodically read it here on this program. I haven't done it in a while. Maybe I'll do that soon. And it's functional definitions of racism. I take one out of Webster's Unabridged Dictionary. I take one from Dr. Bobby Wright, who I have much love and respect for. And I gotta go to his book again, The Psychopathic Racial Personality, because that particular broadcast did not go well. I think I found that there was some technical issues, so I want to make sure, because that's a dynamic piece, you know, the psychopathic racial personality. I take one from Dr. Anderson Thompson. Andy Thompson was a brilliant man out of Chicago. Yeah, Andy Thompson. One from Dr. Milana Karinga, which I heard many, many years ago, you know, and I used to use it. But, you know, I'm soured on Milana. Him and Malefi. Get the Asante, both of them cats, man. And then there's Frances, her piece, and Dr. Amos Wilson. I tell you, that's a hell of a group, ain't it? Bobby Wright, Andy Thompson, Frances, Amos Wilson, and of course Milana. Okay, yeah. But she says racism, white supremacy, is the local and global power system. And dynamic. Racism is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined. which consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol, formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response, has conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity. So that's so you can be clear. Racism is in everything they do. Everything to them is about race. In all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. For the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on the planet Earth, a planet upon which the vast majority of people are classified as non-whites by white-skinned people. All the brown, the black, the red, and so forth, they classify that non-whites by white-skinned people. And all of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive white-skinned people. And that's Francis. So genetically dominant. Dominant when you mate. Dominant, you get dominant. Now when you mate with Caucasians, dominant, they're recessive. So dominant, recessive, you get dominant. That was the fear. That's still the fear. It's always going to be the fear. Although there was this perception that a lot of us were mating or going or marrying Caucasians. That's not the case. But you see it a lot. And I think because you see it on television a lot. You see these commercials. You see, I mean, in the last 20 years, I'd say, maybe not that long. 15 years for sure. And the last 10 years, a proliferation of it, of Caucasians with Asians, Caucasians, homosexual black men with white men, kissing. Never mind. Let me keep myself on track here. Yeah. Anyway. She passed away in 2015. She had a stroke. She lived by herself. You know, she lived by herself. She passed away, in 2016, just January 2nd. She had a stroke in the 30th of December of 15, and she passed away January 2nd of 2016. Yeah. Welsing caused controversy after she said that homosexuality among American Africans was a ploy by white males to decrease the black population, arguing that the emasculation of the black man was a means to prevent the procreation of black people. She also believed that white homosexuality was an effeminization, an attempt by weak men of gaining more masculine. Welsing believed that homosexuality is one of the products of the white people's race toward supremacy, using their own weaknesses as a weapon. Ashe. Ashe. I love Frances. I love where she was coming from. I really do. Of course, you know, if you go to, once again, YouTube, you'll find all kind of good stuff. Maybe you want to listen to Frances on Phil Donahue or the debate she had with William Shockley. If you don't know who William Shockley is, William Shockley, he was not a geneticist. He was a scientist, but he wasn't, you know, but he came up with this idea that we as African people are genetically inferior. You know, we don't have the abilities and the brain power. He was adamant about it. And there were others. When the bell curve came out, if I'm quite sure some of you remember that, came out late 80s, early 90s, the bell curve, Ernestine and Murray, their book, once again, and they used that. I have a good friend, she is in early childhood development, and they used that to attack Head Start. And the idea was they can't learn anyway, so why are we spending all this money developing these programs? You know, they're inferior, you know? It's foolish. Yeah. But, of course, that was not the case. I'm trying to find a couple of nice short pieces that we could, so you can get an idea. I don't know if you've ever heard Frances. But she was no nonsense. Here's a little historical piece on it right here that we can play right quick. Yeah.
Yo, guys, welcome back again today. Today we're going to be talking about Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing was born in 1935 in Chicago, Illinois. Both her father and mother held jobs, in which her mother was a teacher and her father was a doctor in the medical field. She also was the second child of three girls. These two professionals would mold Frances to look deeper into the normal way of life. Her dad, Henry, and her mother, Ida. She would go on to university at the age of 22 in 1957. She would acquire a bachelor's degree of science from Antioch College in Ohio, and in 1962, Frances would acquire a medical doctor degree from Howard University. She also acquired a medical degree in child psychology. She would go on to work at children's hospitals as a psychiatrist and eventually went back to Howard University to work as an assistant professor. Frances would go on to write her first writing, which is The Cress Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism. She would publish this book in 1970. This book would analyze and suggest that humans with little to no pigment in their skin were abnormal. Pigment in human skin seemed to be the natural state. This conclusion came from the majority of humans producing pigment in their skin, such as Europeans or albinism was a genetic inadequacy. This theory, in Frances' book, would be the origins of white supremacy culture and racial perception. 22 years later, she would write The Isis Papers, The Keys to the Colors. This was a collection of essays written by Frances over an 18-year time period. They were also named after the Egyptian goddess Isis, who was the sister of the god of Osiris. She would argue the African origins of civilization by highlighting the achievements in philosophy, science, and architecture. Frances also talks of Europeans being the only people in the world with little to no melanin, and for this reason, they were expelled out of Africa. She also claims that Europeans want to ensure genetic survival in Europeans due to the rest of the world having melanin. Populations of blacks and other melanated people around the world were growing at a faster rate than whites were. If put in the same population with melanin, the melanin would mix with the white and produce a person with melanin. Frances speaks of how Europeans view the human body as a sin and the need to be reborn. While no such concepts existed in any melanated culture around the world before the introduction of foreign religions, I found this Mark Twain quote I learned about and found very interesting. Nearly all the black and brown skins are beautiful, but white is rare. How rare? One may learn by walking down a street in Paris, New York, or London on any weekday, particularly in an unfashionable street, and keeping count of the satisfactory complexions encountered in the course of a mile. Where dark complexions are masked, they make the whites look bleached out, unwholesome, sometimes frankly ghastly. That was said by Mark Twain himself. These papers and writings were the first time an African-American psychiatrist wrote on and against a predominantly white practice in the West. Theories and studies on social, cultural, and psychology in the West were mostly done by Europeans. She was qualified to speak on all these subjects, and she did. She would be the first to focus on why white supremacy came into the world. She had pushback and even debated on live TV. Her debate would be in 1974 with Dr. William Shockley. Dr. William Shockley at the time was author of A Theory of Black Genetic Inferiority. She would debate, and the bases were, and challenge, the traditional definitions of racism. She would speak on these definitions that were put in place by white behavioral and social scientists. There was a lot of controversy surrounding her, and she was even spoke about on the Los Angeles Times for being the first scientist to analyze white racism in Western psychiatry. Frances had a strong belief that racism could be erased by education, self-respect, and discipline. She would go on to lecture at many universities and also in England. She also advised black women and men to not have kids until they were in their 30s. This was so they can properly educate themselves so they can raise the next generation to function at a high level. Frances would pass away in 2016 at the age of 80 years old. So today we talked about Frances Cress Welsing. Please like and subscribe. Turn on the bell notification down there so you'll get all my videos. Add me on all social medias, which is African Network, which is Instagram, Twitter, SoundCloud, Snapchat, Facebook, and TikTok. Each one teach one. Always love each other. Always learn from each other. And yo, guys, until next time, keep debating. Peace. One love.
Ashe. Ashe. So I'm going to find another one that I'm going to. I'm trying to make them not too long because I want to leave you, brothers and sisters, with some time to give us your perspective. And I'm quite sure you got the book, the ISIS papers. It was, you know, it was hot back then, you know. Yeah. ISIS papers. African Liberation Day. You know, yesterday was what? St. Patrick's Day, right? Yeah. And so you see, and see, that's another thing about the psychology of stuff. Talk to Bobby Wright, who is along with Frances, you know, psychologist. And I never forget Bobby Wright in Milwaukee when the Hyatt Regency Hotel first opened. They had the Black Political Convention, and he was the keynote speaker. That was my first time learning about Dr. Bobby Wright. I did not know or heard of him. He's in Chicago, and was working at the Garfield Park Mental Health Institute, which later was renamed in his honor. And he's talking about, he coined the phrase menticide. Menticide. Deliberate destruction and death of people's mind. One example he used was like you're watching the sporting event, and Notre Dame. What is Notre Dame's name? The Fighting Irish, you know. And you're watching the game, and they talk about down the court or down the field. Here come the Irish. Here come the Irish, and all of them are brothers. Just like when Notre Dame beat UCLA. Yeah, beat UCLA with Bill Walton. They had an 80-game win streak, really. 80-some game win streak all those years that they didn't lose when Kareem was there and then when Bill Walton was there and so forth. And that Saturday, never forget it because it was on TV and I watched it. You know, Notre Dame had John Shumate, Dwight Clay, Gary Brokaw. Man, yeah. And they beat him. Adrian Dantley. And here come the Irish. Yeah. The psychology of it. And so Frances, her thing, I was going here with this. Yesterday, many of us, you know, we put on something green. Some of us even foolishly try to look like leprechauns. Some of us foolishly went to Irish bars and got drunk with Caucasians who were actually Irish. Some maybe not the whole idea, you know. And so May 25th is African Liberation Day. I wonder if those same brothers and sisters who put on all that green and drank green beer and so forth will put on red, black, and green on May 25th. I wear it every day. It is a part of who and what I am. 24/7, 365. African. And I ain't talking about no damn Africa Day. I'm pissed that those Africans let them crackers do that. Renamed it, talking about Africa Day. What the fuck? Excuse me, I'm sorry, apologize. What the hell does that mean? See, because when you say African Liberation Day, oh, yeah. Because that's what we strive for. Independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. This is what Francis said on African Liberation Day before she passed. This is in 2014. So I'm going to play this particular piece.
is my cosmic assignment. about racism. When I was training in psychiatry at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C. And I was in a training program, and I thought I was going to go back to Chicago and do pediatrics. But I got in psychiatry, and I tell people the truth is, it was the lazy factor. I had done an internship at Cook County Hospital in Chicago, and when you're doing an internship, you're on 12 and off 12, and on 12 and off 12, and being called all night. And so it was a fluke. I had to go back to Washington, D.C. and start training in psychiatry, and then I thought I was going to be going back to Chicago. But after I stopped staying up all night, I said, no more. I'm going to stay in psychiatry. The program that I was in, all of the trainers were white. There were about three black psychiatrists training. We were being trained on Freudian psychoanalytic theory. There was absolutely nothing in the training program that had to do with the mental health of black people. Well, I'm a third generation physician. My father's father was a physician in Chicago who died in 1909. And my parents had trained us. You are being given an education not to escape your community, but to get knowledge and understanding. So I was in this training program, and we had patients who were white and patients who were black. And I was just interested in the fact that all of the black patients, there was something about racism in their history. And so even though we were not being taught about anything that was specifically to help black people, I had to learn the Freudian psychoanalytic theory, but then on the side, I had to learn what was going to help us.
All right.
So in the histories, taking histories on black patients, there is always something about racism in the history. We were actually told black people could not benefit from psychotherapy because they didn't have the intellect. Well, you know, that didn't compute with my home training. And so I said, if I'm going to be able to help black patients, and I was interested in helping every patient that came in front of me, but my assignment from home, you help your community. So racism was always in the history in terms of black people's experience. And so I said, I've got to understand more about racism. When I was an undergraduate, I went to Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Integration then meant one black girl in the class. I used to think I was a Marxist. And I remember going home, sitting in the dining room, family sitting down. My grandmother was there with us, my father's mother. And I just announced, I'm a Marxist. And my grandmother said, the more education they get, the dumber they become. But in my pursuit of helping black patients and needing to understand racism, because that was what was in their history. And any of you who have the book, The ISIS Papers, the subtitle, The Keys to the Colors, actually came from a black man who was a patient, an emergency patient at the hospital, at D.C. General Hospital Psychiatry Section,
And this man, the clinic wasn't busy that night. And so I interviewed him. I wrote a diagnosis of schizophrenic reaction paranoid type.
Wow.
Since there were not a lot of patients to be seen, I said, let me sit down and talk further to this man and see if I can understand what actually is he saying. And so I talked to him for a long time. I wasn't understanding everything that he said. But in the end, he was a tall, black-skinned man. He had a black pants and a white shirt. And he said, Doc, if we could just find the keys to the cults. So that is the subtitle of my book that came from this patient. So I went further, knowing that I needed to understand racism beyond what Karl Marx thought he understood. And I was at a Black Power Committee meeting in Washington, D.C. And after the meeting, people went to somebody's apartment, sitting down on the floor, eating African food. And I heard a black man, because there were only black people there, I heard a black man on the other side of the room say, racism is a system. Now you all repeat after me. Racism is a system. Now interestingly, last week, the Attorney General Eric Holder, if you remember several years ago, when he made a profound statement as the first black attorney general, he said, are we a nation of cowards being unable to talk about racism? How many of you remember his saying that? Now that was courageous and that was profound. This past week, the Attorney General, in commenting on the interview with Donald Sterling, everybody familiar with that interview, he said racism is systemic. It's beyond the ignorant comment of racism. He said it's systemic. And I hope he got that from me. Courageous to just put that question on the table. Are we a nation of cowards? And the last paper I gave at the National Medical Association in Toronto last July, I used to say racism was the number one mental health problem. In that paper, I said the denial of racism is the number
sister Frances Cress Welsing, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we are going to let me play another piece, and then we're going to open the phone line so you can get your perspective. You can tell us about your feelings about Dr. Frances Cress Welsing on her birthday, March 18th. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. Okay? I hear you.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
walkway dressed down in a braid. Brothers with their afros taking center stage. Watching as this culture slowly comes of age. With a mind of its own, yeah. Mothers out in the yard hanging up her clothes. Fathers playing with the kids, keeping them on the go. Neighborhoods feeding on the heart of its soul. And that's where my feelings live. Cause I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love. Straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Teachers off in the classroom giving up the love. Supported by that mom and dad who want that special touch. Little acts of kindness prove to mean so much. When we give what we know. Kitchen pots are banging, smell of soul food fills the air. You walk past the neighbor's house wishing you had dinner there. Better times for living when people seem to care about that place where they grow. That's why I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love my people. So from the stove straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. That I'm loving my people. Folks gather at the church early Sunday morn. Openly they sing and praise and gospel music's born. God gave us love enough with spirits free to run. Why can't we learn to love ourselves like we're the chosen one? Come and let me know how your life is doing good. Tell me how the blessings flow through the neighborhood. Share with me that time of feelings understood. In that place we call home. Cause I love my people. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. So that I'm loving mine.
I love.
So from the stove straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. So that I love my people.
I love.
The way they let it go on the dance floor.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk Radio Network.com. We're honoring and celebrating the life of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing and the many contributions that she has given us, and we love her and appreciate what she has done, the information she has brought. Believe me, because I can remember listening to her for many years, the interviews and the presentations that she gave. I was with a program in the 80s, and out of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, we were studying policies and so forth. And so we went to D.C. to talk to our congressperson, this, that, and the other. And we stayed at the Harambe Hotel. And Dr. Frances Cress used to give presentations at the Harambe Hotel on a Thursday night. And I happened to be there. I don't know if anybody else was with me. I knew I was going. And then, even deeper, I was just walking in that neighborhood around around Harambe Hotel. In fact, what Harambe Hotel evolved into was a training center for Howard University's hospitality program. But I was walking in the neighborhood at a school, overheard something, and I guess it said, "Come in here." And there was Kathy Hughes. Of course, Kathy Hughes out of Omaha, Nebraska, sister developed a media empire. Yeah, Radio 1, TV 1. Yeah, Kathy Hughes. But more importantly, it was Anthony Broder. And his book had not come out yet, the Nile Valley Contribution to Civilizations, but the other book was out, and I bought a number of those because I could share them with the class I was working with back in Milwaukee. I was a firefighter, and on my off days, we worked one day off, two on my off days, I would go to schools and talk with kids, talk with young people, particularly those who were, you know, having a hard time to understand it, what you're supposed to be doing here. And it ain't what you're doing. You're supposed to be learning. So, I mean, you know, that's what I was doing, and I rather enjoyed it, and I didn't get paid to do it. I had a job. I was a firefighter. But what I wanted to do was make an impact, you know. So we're going to, there's another piece I'm going to play here, and the interview by Frances is a little bit longer piece, but it's a good one. So.
This edition of Black Journal is dedicated to the Miami Times, a member of the Crusading Black Press, serving Miami, Florida, the 17th largest black community in the United States. Our theme on this series is Black Centennial, but we really don't mean 100 years of living. What we have in mind is the black presence, yesterday and today. And although our theme is historical and contemporary, this edition will emphasize the present-day issues of Afro-Americans. This special edition will feature two contemporary spokespersons, Dr. Frances Welsing, a well-known psychiatrist whose psychiatric theories and views on a number of topical issues have had a significant impact on Afro-Americans. She is the author of The Cress Theory of Color Confrontation. And Melvin Van Peebles, director and producer of various stage plays and movies. He is the author of a newly published book entitled The True American. Our first guest is Dr. Frances Welsing. Joining me in the questioning is Richard Prince from The Washington Post. Mr. Prince has the first question.
Yes, Dr. Welsing, it's been about a year ago since you were dismissed from Howard University. And at the time, I recall you charged that your Cress theory, which in brief holds that whites are inferior to blacks because of the lack of melanin, was responsible for that dismissal. And I'm wondering whether you still believe that and what proof you have of that.
Well, Dick, I do believe it. I was dismissed from Howard, fired from Howard in June 1975. In November 1974, while still at Howard, I heard a rumor that I was going to be blocked from promotion and tenure because of my views, not because of my academic work. And I went immediately to the Dean of the College of Medicine, Dr. Marion Mann, and I asked him I said, Dr. Mann, I hear that I am going to be blocked from promotion and tenure because of my views. And Dr. Mann responded, to be frank with you, Dr. Welsing, this paper that you wrote, and I said, the Crest Theory of Color Confrontation, he said, yes. He went on to say that it did not make sense for me to say that white people were envious of black people because white people lack skin pigmentation. And we went on from that point. But let me make one correction. My theory does not say that whites are inferior to blacks. I don't say that. I say that whites feel that they are inferior because they cannot produce skin pigmentation and because their status as, I say, a variant of albinism is genetic recessive to blacks, and they can be genetically annihilated by non-white people, that this is what causes that sense of inadequacy, that they have built a total behavioral system that is a compensation. White supremacy is a compensation for a sense of white genetic inadequacy.
I see. One other follow-up on that, and that is, what background in genetics do you have to enable you to document that theory?
Well, I'm a medical doctor, mm-hmm. and all medical doctors receive or take courses in genetics. And this is very, very basic genetics. Mm-hmm. And it not only is very basic genetics, this is common lay knowledge. And we hear it, the dominance, the genetic dominance of black over white is heard in the expression, one drop of black blood makes you black. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you were to relate to a white female, the product of that relationship would be an individual that is identifiable as what is called non-white. They would have something, I mean, the curliness of the hair, the darkness of the skin would make the child look more like you than like the mother.
I see.
Dr. Welsing, your theory to me seems to infer some innate behavior on the part of a human being because they are, quote, black or white. Would you agree or disagree that the terms black and white are not genetic definitions? And if they are not genetic definitions, then how could your theory be true?
Well, wait a minute. When you say genetic definitions, I'm not quite sure what you say, but for the sake of time, the factors that determine whether we're going to have skin pigmentation or whether we lack skin pigmentation is based on genes. In other words, you have genes that determine the quantity of melanin pigment that is going to be produced in your skin, in your eyes, in your hair. If you have a gene, a mutation towards an inability to produce that pigment, that is also genetically determined. And that is at least within the context of the Western world or the white supremacy culture, the dominant classification of people, not as determined by Francis Welsing, but as determined by white people themselves, is your classification. Either you are white or you are classified as non-white. This is on your birth certificate. This is on every paper of identification that you have. And this focus on skin coloration, I maintain, is based on the awareness on the people who are now in power, that they are a minority. The white group represents a minority in the world population. And the color focus is something that is a psychological, I say a psychological necessity based on a genetic reality. So I don't know if this gets to your question. Now, any other thing that one might say that results from the absence of pigment, I mean, that's another discussion. I don't know whether you want to go into
that. Well, following that logic, then, would it not be accurate to say that there would be a difference psychologically in light-skinned blacks from dark-skinned blacks?
Well, psychologically, yes, and I think that we are all aware of that. Under white supremacy, the conditioning has been the closer you are to white, the more acceptable you are. So that, for example, all of us learned as we were growing up in the black community, if you are black, stay back. If you are brown, stick around. If you are yellow, you're mellow. And if you're white, you're right. And the appreciation of an individual, even within the black group itself, was very often based on the relative absence of skin pigmentation. And even within families, children thought that they were ugly if they were darker. And families, parents have said that to children. Even now, people want to know the first, when a baby is just born in the hospital, some of the first questions that are asked by the black parents about the child or the black family members, is it light skin and does it have straight hair? to know how much value we're going to put on this new baby. Because within the framework of the culture in which we live, the closer you are to white, the more you're considered beautiful, and perhaps under some circumstances, the more opportunities you will have.
Well, Dr. Welsing, if it is true that you were dismissed from Howard because of your views on that subject, what would you say then of the application and the implications for academic freedom at Howard University?
Well, I say that, first of all, Howard University is a black university in name only. In other words, those who fund an institution within the framework of a political system, those who fund an institution determine what is going to be done within the framework of that institution. And so although Howard University is referred to as a black university and the majority of the student body is black and the majority of the faculty is black, still it is possible, I say it is possible, that those people who control the purse strings can say, we do not like such and such an ideology or philosophy that is coming out of this center. If this continues to come out, then we will not give you funds for building and we will not give you funds to continue the functioning of your center. Now you make your choice.
Well, are you saying that this happened in your case, or was it simply the case of one dean saying this to you? I mean,
well, let's put it this way. I can only suspect that it happened if you ask me to prove it, because I will say that the same funding forces or sources, if they said, well, we like very much what Dr. Welsing is doing. First of all, no one has been able to disprove what she's saying. That we think this is very interesting. I mean, whether the theory is correct or incorrect, it's a valuable idea to discuss, or it is being discussed a lot. We're glad to have that debate going on in an academic institution. We think that that individual ought to stay there. Then that individual would be there.
What about the Board of Trustees and the president of the university? What have they said about what happened to you?
Well, the Board of Trustees and the president of the university concurred in the decision to dismiss me, despite the fact that the chairman of my department and the executive committee of my department recommended that I be promoted and given tenure. Also, the Committee on Appointments and Promotions within the College of Medicine also recommended that I be promoted and given tenure.
So what do you do now, then? What is your next step?
Well, right now, we have been involved in several grievance committee hearings, and I have a lawyer, and the university has a lawyer, so I don't know what the outcome of it is going to be. But my charge is that I was removed from the university as a breach of my academic freedom, because the discussion centered around the paper that I wrote. And that someone disagreed, namely the dean. I mean, he's the one who made the statement to me that he disagreed with the content of the theory. Although I told him I had many documents, I have many, many letters from white people in this area of the world and in foreign countries who have written to me and said, yes, I have always wished that I had more melanin. And I said that to the dean. I don't ask black people what white people think about themselves. I ask white people, or they will tell me what they think about themselves. And anybody who watches the phenomena of sun tanning, millions and millions and millions and millions of white people, the minute the sun is out, lying in the sun, taking the chance of getting skin cancer to get dark, cannot tell me that white people are satisfied with the way that they look.
Dr. Welsing, you've charged in a sense that the climate of academic freedom at Howard University is threatened. The Washington Post has said in an editorial that the leadership of Howard University was wavering. Therefore, it was not stable, and Howard really didn't have a definite sense of mission. Now, do you feel, in the context of those two statements, that the era of academic freedom or the climate of academic freedom at Howard includes whites who teach there, or do you feel it's basically relegated to the blacks who have theories, quote, that might be controversial or unacceptable?
Well, Tony, I don't want to get off into comparing whether it applies to whites or whether it applies to blacks, you know, whether whites can say what they want at Howard and whether blacks cannot. I will simply say, and I don't really, I honestly do not fault the leadership at Howard University within a certain sense. In other words, we are an oppressed people in a power system that I maintain supports white domination. If you are going to work and function within that context, you have to go by the rules that have been set up. Now, this may not have anything to do with truth. It may not have anything to do with justice. It may not have anything to do with reality. But I say that the pressure is there on the leadership in so-called black institutions, we might even say as far as television programs are concerned. If you are going to say the wrong thing that makes the people who control the purse strings unhappy, then chances are that you are not going to have that opportunity very long. If what you are saying is conceived of as a threat to the status quo, or if what is being taught or what is being propagated in some way will change the minds of the listeners so that people begin to behave in a different way because they begin to think of things in a different perspective or from a different angle.
Well, my question in asking for a comparison of academic freedom vis-a-vis black professors, yes, or white professor, referred specifically to a case of a white professor from South Africa named, yes, Ruben, who has been dismissed, qualifiedly dismissed or whatever it is from the university,
yes,
and basically because the students did not believe he had the right to say what he wanted to say at the university, which parallels, if I'm following you correctly, the fact that you are alleging that you have been fired, in fact, because you had the temerity to say, theoretically, what you said.
Well, let me just go. I look at that particular case. There's the case of Dr. Rubin, who the students had charged that he was negligent in his duties towards the student body. Now, all these charges have been washed away, but this was essentially, as I understand it, what happened. They alleged that he had done a couple of things that some people had said were racist, and also that he had been negligent in his responsibilities. Well, when that happened, all of the newspapers that are white-owned and supported went to his defense. How dare Howard University remove this individual who was an anti-apartheid, meaning an anti-white supremacy, anti-racist, took an anti-racist position in South Africa, that this man has, in quotes, demonstrated his interest in black people and non-white people. Now, I just look at that case in this way. Here is an individual that, as far as the media in the District of Columbia is concerned, they defended this man because he had taken an anti-racist, anti-apartheid position in South Africa. But there's Francis Welsing, who has written a paper and a theory on white supremacy, has to be dismissed from the same institution. Because I consider myself a counter-racist, a person who is moving against an unjust and negative force of white supremacy. But I have to be dismissed because I wrote a theory that was against white supremacy. But an individual who is classified as white, who took a position so-called an anti-white supremacy position in South Africa, he is defended as being someone who should be at a black institution, defended at least by the media. Do you see what I'm saying? Because one of the papers in Washington, the Evening Star, in an editorial said, well, apparently Howard University has a small group of racists, meaning black people who are supposed to be against white people, you know, faculty and students who are anti-white, and now it's time to weed out all of the other black people who have an anti-white position. Now, this is said in a city in which there are two major white universities who have very, very small black student bodies and very, very small percentages of blacks on their faculty. But there's no examination or no gross criticism of the white dominance and presence at the two white institutions, but let's weed out if there are other black people who in any way can be looked at as being against whites. Well, then attack that black center. And it's a lot of chaos and confusion, but I think that if it is understood the dominant dynamic in this area of the world, the dominant dynamic that is going on throughout the world is white domination. I don't think that anyone can refute that. The persons who have the power in the world today, all of it is in the hands of people who themselves classify themselves as white as opposed to non-white. That is where the power is. If we understand that, we can understand everything else.
We have time for one short question and one short response.
Oh, I see. Well, this was going to be longer, but anyhow, you said that the operating dynamic is racism, in essence.
White supremacy.
White supremacy.
Yes.
Do you make any allowances for economic domination or any class differences? And
okay, very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The system of white supremacy is a dynamic that encompasses all areas of people activity. That means economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war.
Mm-hmm.
You have a behavioral system that is, in all of those areas of activity, seeking to establish white supremacy. I say that the class positions in that society are white upper class, white middle class, white lower class, and then non-white, non-class, irrespective of income. Income is not power.
Thank you very much. I'm
okay.
Sorry to have to interrupt, but we'll have to thank you so much, Dr. Welsing, for being on Black Journal.
Okay.
Francis Cress Welsing. And, You know, some of the things that we need to talk about, sorry, family, is that, you know, when she came up with this and her book came out and people were talking about racism, white supremacy, of course, as far as I'm concerned, there is no such thing as race. So basically, it's not about race, it's about culture. And the culture of Africa, which is diametrically opposed to the culture of Europeans, and they have they have shown that to be the case because they want to impose their culture on everybody. They want to impose it on us to such degree that we are willing to eliminate ourselves based upon the idea that we can't be like them. So, you know, I love Frances Cress Welsing. I loved her idea. I loved the book, the ISIS paper. I loved her work with Neely Fuller and the work that he has done, because it helped us understand psychologically and physiologically what we are up against. You know, just like she was explaining how the University Howard, supposedly American African institution, was treating her, and you had a Caucasian there who was getting support. That's not unusual. It's just like many other universities, even to this day. That interview on Tony Brown's journal is from the, I'd say, what is that? I know the first piece I did, that was, I think that's from 70. That's from the 70s, you know? Because she did develop tenure at Howard University and so forth. She, once again, as I said, she lectured on the campus every Thursday. And so join this conversation. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. There's a number you in the queue, and you know what to do. Hit star twice, and we can get you in. If you have a question or comment concerning it's the birth date, the born date of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, a warrior scholar. She was, man, truly a warrior scholar. Brother Irv, good afternoon. How you doing, my brother? How you doing?
Baboshi, good morning. Good afternoon. Mm-hmm. Baboshi, first of all, happy birthday to Frances Cress Welsing.
Right on.
Frances Cress Welsing, and I listened to the piece you just played. She was just asking for one thing. And the one thing she was asking for, which people may not understand, is what Neely Fuller taught her. She's asking for justice. Mm-hmm. And I listened to Neely Fuller speak, mm-hmm. and he's very sensible. He's a very practical man. Everything has to make sense to Neely Fuller,
right.
And that's how she speaks. But you know, I'd heard this before that they did not give her tenure. But Baba Oshie, we keep getting surprised when white people do what white people do. Let's be clear, if you I looked at a little teeny bit, like 3 minutes of the NAACP awards, and they were so integrationist. If I didn't see the color of their skin, I would have thought they were white. Mm. I mean, what I'm saying is they're trying. We have to be beholden to the people who pay the bill.
Right.
And she said that. If it says a Pepsi sign behind you, or they keep showing McDonald's commercials, or you keep seeing these GM car commercials, those are the people that's paying for this. Mm-hmm. And if you mm-hmm. think you're going to mess with their money flow, because what the bottom line here is to make American Africans the biggest consumers in the world. We have to be consumers. We have to teach our children to be consumers. I'm looking at the people on this show, and they're walking around with these red-bottom shoes and all these material things that give the impression that they have made it. They give the impression that they have done something that you wish you could do. But what they've done, if they put themselves in a place that they have to keep on their hamster wheel, because the capitalism doesn't ever have an ending. Capitalism is perpetual. The road never ends. You make one turn and you have to go another way. Then you make another turn, you go another way, and all of it is orchestrated by Erugu. Mm-hmm. If you think there aren't people who have so much money that money does not matter to them, why does money matter to the American African so much? Because he's so detached from his universe. He's so detached from where he's supposed to be in the universe. So he's believing in materialism. And materialism will never, ever satisfy you. Because Baba Oshie, if I give you a car, I can give you a bigger car. Mm-hmm. If I give you a house, right. I can give you a bigger house. It never, ever has a satisfaction or ending. But whereas the universe, if you're one with the universe, you can see satisfaction, because satisfaction is in your legacy. Your children give you something you can't buy.
Right.
You know, and that's why they're coming for your children.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to see that and know that. But Baba Oshie, there's a light at the end of this tunnel, my brother. And I have to end this, and I'm going to get off and let someone else speak. I have to end this on a positive note. I saw some news today that Burkina Faso is building dams. They're building dams. They have a wind field. They're building roads. These things are happening right now and almost finished. That they're doing their own money. These things are positive things that are breaking the shackles of colonialism. At the same time, At the same time, you see the results. The results of destabilizing a government in Haiti. Mm-hmm. Haiti. You see the results of it. For years, the United States actually took over that country, you know, because they want to keep that waterway open for their drugs and their commerce. Mm-hmm. And I did say drugs, because you remember Salvador, you remember Ronald Reagan, the Contras running drugs. So let's not act like it didn't happen. Because, you know, Donald Trump just said it's going to be a bloodbath if he doesn't win, huh? It's already a bloodbath for black people. Stop playing. I don't put that past. Well, I don't put anything past Erugu. So let's be clear what we're thinking and what we're saying. We're not surprised at anything that this country or any other country does when they're looking out for themselves. And if we keep running around here talking to somebody, reading from someone else's script, and listening to someone else tell us how to think, we're going to keep getting the same exact results. Just because you marched with Martin Luther King and held hands and sang Kumbaya with some black people 40, 50, 60 years ago, what that mean? What Janet Jackson said, what you done lately? What you been doing? Frances Cuz Wilson is absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. She's on point.
White people want to...
She was on point. Yeah, she was on point.
I mean, white people want to get dark, and black people want to get the hair straight. Mm-hmm. So we're living in a total state of confusion, because we've been indoctrinated into a system and into a religion that doesn't work off of logic. That's why we don't make sense, because the system doesn't make sense that you believe in. If there's no logic in it, then it doesn't have to have a meaning. It doesn't have to be defined. It can be anything we say it is. And then therefore you walk around here being anything that you say, that we say you are. Let that marinate.
Yeah.
So my point, let me get off and let someone else speak.
Right, Bob Oshie,
thank you for taking my call. We'll talk later for sure.
All right. Peace, my brother.
I say.
Yeah, my good brother, Brother Irv, man. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to give him a call so we can come in and co-host again. I love it. Frances. She was presenting to us the understanding of why this madness persists. She was explaining that it's in everything, in all areas of people activity. That the idea that these people are superior, and they must dominate and control all areas of human activity. And so my concern is this. If we understand this, why do we continue to beg these son of, get out, separate, do your own thing. Go. Let me say this, family. There has never been a need for Pan-Africanism that it is right now. We must go home. We must work with the brothers and sisters on the continent, kicking everybody else's ass out. And once we've done that, we manage our land. We manage our resources. We develop systems and institutions that will support us from that point on well into the future. We become the model. It's a damn shame that we have, you know, I was going to play a piece with Dr. Arcano, you know, and that piece that I was going to play was talking about the European Jews. This is prior to their genocidal move against Palestinians in Palestine to remove them. And what she was saying about what these people do. And the fact is that in order for you to do something, you have to have resources. You just can't say you claim to do something. You got to have resources. And we have them. We could do whatever the hell it is that we need to do or could do. We could do that. The only thing that prevents us, we're not in our right minds. That is the only thing that prevents us from doing it. The Arabs, the Saudi Arabians, the people in Oman, Bhutan, Kuwait, and all those other places, 50, 60, 70 years ago, couldn't do shit. Just keeping it real. Oil is discovered. It's family. It's just like Black Wall Street. When we were moved to Oklahoma. We came there out of the Southeast as part of the Trail of Tears. And many of us migrated to Oklahoma. But when oil struck and the lands that we were on, oil was found. We were getting paid. Resource, you have money. You can build. Look what they built. Look what those brothers and sisters coming together. Look what they built. And yes, the Caucasian, the cracker, was angry and jealous and mean-spirited. It wasn't the fact that Richard Rowland or Dick Rowland, who was a shoeshine kid, and the lady, the young girl who operated the elevator, because apparently maybe she didn't get it flush with when you open the door, that is flush there, and he tripped and fell onto her, and she screamed. That's what happened. No, those crackers were waiting for the... Oh, that was it. Right there. That was it. Now they're going to come in and take that neighborhood. They're going to bomb it, just like the Gap Band said, you dropped a bomb on me. Yes, the Gap Band is from Tulsa. And the Gap stands for Greenwood, Archer and Pine. The streets of Black Wall Street, Greenwood, Archer and Pine. You dropped a bomb on me, and they did. For those 2 days, horror, terror. They said that, you know, weeks later, months later, they would see Caucasians with their with their clothes on, you know, with their coat, with a coat or a hat or something like that they just stole. They just robbed and pillaged. So, let me grab some calls here. Brother Paul.
Baba Ocean.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Baba Ocean, really quickly, what you did not say, and at the talk about the Tulsa piece that really makes me upset, there was never, ever any talk of compensation. And even when there was, no reparations, no, they acknowledged it, but it was no compensation talked about.
No, and it was not going to be.
With the Japanese, there was compensation. With the Jewish people, there was compensation. But with the American African, there was no talk of making those people whole.
See, what happened is this. They felt that, just like with reparations, the discussion about that, well, we can't do that, you can't do that. But see, two intelligent brothers documented what people lost. What they had and what was stolen, what was, you know, burnt up, mm-hmm. what was, they had the record. They had it.
Wow.
And they presented it, but they were not going to, you're right. No, the insurance companies, no, they were not going to do it. And they didn't to this present moment. They haven't done a damn thing in terms of, I've been to Tulsa. I was there on the 100th commemoration of the massacre of Tulsa. I saw some of the workshops. I saw some of the divisiveness.
What?
I had Brother Chief Ogumawali, who did a dynamic presentation and tour of Black Wall Street. No, mm-hmm. no. They argued for it. They wanted to present it, but no. The governor, the mayor, all against it. Caucasians, reparations, oh, please. That's why all the conversation that you have heard, even California, the only place that mm-hmm. we have secured something was in Evanston, Illinois. That's based on the fact that there's documentation of them being redlined, of them devaluing their community, devaluing their land, and so forth. See? So, no, they had that. They had that documentation. Because these brothers, they, you know, every day you come to that, to the tent where they were, and he would just painstakingly jot it all down. Yeah.
Wow.
But yet they said no. Mm-mm. Over 100 years now. Mm-hmm. Over 100 years. And for many years, for many decades, even if you were in Tulsa, you didn't know about it.
Mm.
You did not know about what happened. Because what they wanted to do was hoping it would just go away. Just like when they erased, Rosewood. Once that happened to Rosewood, they took it off the map.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, again, we're dealing with an evil people, you know, and because of their human development. They're selfish, greedy, mean-spirited, jealous undermining, backstabbing, and this is who they are. That's why, to me, anything that they bring, because everything that you know that they bring, there's racism in it. So the religion,
right?
You know, all of it. And so, to me, we reject, we should, we must reject anything that Caucasians present to us or they bring us. We reject it, whatever the hell it is. Jesus rejected. A monetary system rejected. Government rejected. Labor system, law system rejected. Because why?
I say.
Because it benefits them. And it decimates us. So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Good point.
All right, brother. I'm going to catch a few more people here. All right. All right, Irv. Thank you.
Yeah, brief.
Brother Paul, how you doing?
Yeah, alive and kicking, Bubba.
Right on.
Ochi, I'm absolutely fantastic. So, just trying to do a little bit better. There's not much time. I'm going to
hog up all of them.
I'm just getting straight to the point. You know, I've had the fortunate benefit of engaging with Dr. Francis Wilson.
Beautiful.
I don't know nobody in anybody in the UK, I can say that, who I've ever spoke to who has had that benefit. So thanks for this technology. Thanks for Carl Nelson's platform. I had that opportunity, and I engaged with her quite a few times. Fantastic.
Right on.
You know, an impressive thing. I went to a meeting one day. And it was a professor at a university in England. He was speaking, a brilliant professor. I'm going to share his details with you. Brilliant Afrocentric professor. And he had some students from France. And I remember what one of the young black girl students, she put her hand up. And she said, she started talking about Francis Quest Wilson, yeah, and about ISIS papers. And I was filled with so much joy because I thought, well, I've actually spoken with her through a platform. And it was amazing to me how this young girl interpreted the work. And then I thought to myself, you know, we have to realize the importance of genius, and we have to realize how genius spreads. Here was this French girl, you know, in this university lecture, giving her interpretation of, you know, the ISIS papers. And I just said, wow, I don't think we fully realize how genius some of us, you know, and it's truly genius, you know, because the interpretation she was giving was bang on. So if one thinks this message isn't spreading around the globe, everywhere, among the young, if they think that, they better go and re-educate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Ashe. Right on. Yes, sir. All right, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, dear brother. All right. Brother Rick.
Yes, sir. Man, this is like church. I'm listening to these brothers, and they are really brothers. In the true sense of the word, you know, including, I mean, is you, yourself and the brothers that call.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how we can do it, but we got to get us, you got to be on more than once a week or twice or three times, you know, a little hour or two, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Man, you ought to have a damn station, a whole station.
I don't know about that, but I appreciate this opportunity here on Time for an Awakening to be on the program and to have this venue. And I don't take it lightly. I'm serious about it.
I know you don't.
I try to be as consistent.
I know you don't.
Yeah.
And it's so few brothers on the air that speak truth. Truth by itself is a powerful tool.
Right.
And it's very rare. The people that they portray or project to us publicly, many of them are just as confused as that, you know, the brother coming out of the liquor store. You know, I mean, they just got a microphone in front of them. And so when I get to hear, you know, your station, particularly your show, and the callers that call in.
Yeah.
It gives me some hope.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, it gives me hope to know that there are others. See, I've not met you, you know, but I know you.
Right.
Because I can hear the truth in what you say, and you don't, you like me, and I don't mean this in a way where I'm trying to hold myself high, but I don't give a damn what these people are doing.
That's
I know
right.
what we got to do.
Right.
I love my parents. Mm-hmm. I love my father and my mother. But there was a time when I realized I had to leave. I had to leave. It didn't diminish my love for them.
Right.
But I had to do what I, as a man, had to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I was growing into being a young, and that's how we are as a people. We've gone through all of this shit, OC. I mean, that's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They try to make it seem like, you know, we always have been a part. We have never been a part of this. Never. And we never will be.
We never will be. Let's be real.
It,
right. We never will be.
The sooner we realize that, we will do just like I did with my parents. You know, regardless of my affection for them, mm-hmm. I realized I had to leave.
You had to go.
I had to go.
We had to go.
And we are in that same situation today. We got to go. If not physically, we got to mentally go, you know, because that's really where it begins. And that also is where it ends. You know, we mentally realize we got to get out, stop celebrating these holidays, stop participating in their political system.
Right.
Man, there's so much knowledge of us, so much knowledge that we could do whatever we want to do if we just set our mind to it. Bullets and shit don't mean nothing, man, when you got your mindset.
That's right, brother.
You know what I'm saying? Hey,
that's
man,
right.
Hey, I just want you to know I appreciate you. I appreciate your callers. You know, it's like I said, it's like church for me, man. OG, hey, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I never did like going to church because they were sitting there talking about Jesus and the Lord. Hey, I'm talking about my brother sitting next to me. That's where the power is, you know, or the sister sitting next to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not with something in no book. It's what we produce and what we will tolerate and, what more importantly, what we will not tolerate any longer.
Right on.
So continue doing what you're doing, brother.
Appreciate
and I
it.
Want you to know, you may not get a lot of calls, but you got a lot of listeners.
Right on, Brother Rick. Thank you so much, dear brother.
Thank you.
All right. Peace to you.
Thank you, OG.
All right.
Peace, brother.
All right, family. I really thank you. I want to thank all those who listened and called in and participate. I really do. And I was preparing for another program until I realized, because sometimes I just go see whose birthday it was, and I said, wow, it's Francis Chris Wilson's birthday. Let's immediately do a show on that. So if it flowed, that's the spirit, brother, because it was done, bam, like that. And so I appreciate y'all. Love y'all for it. So we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure as hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Take care.